Ms. Ogden?
Molly Odom for Mr. Pittman. May it please the court. This case presents nothing new, no new issue of law or unique factual configuration. It presents rather a situation far too common and too often condemned by this court to be in any manner excusable. We must deal again with grossly improper prosecutorial comment during closing argument, which substantially prejudiced the defendant's right to a fair trial. And I'm quoting from this court's decision in United States v. Garza from 1979, where the court was handling the same type of similar misconduct. In Garza, just as in this case, the prosecutor vouched for the government's witness's credibility and bolstered the government's case, and the court reversed on plain error. In this case, there were two separate episodes of misconduct that occurred. The first occurred during cross-examination, when the prosecutor repeatedly tried to force Mr. Pittman to accuse the agents who testified for the prosecution of lying. And the government has conceded in its brief that this was indeed error. The second episode occurred during the prosecutor's closing argument, when he improperly urged the jury to credit the agent's testimony when weighing the evidence. He also improperly urged the jury to enforce the law.
Was that in the first or the second?
That's in the during the closing remarks. The second episode that occurred.
Right. No, but
It's in rebuttal.
The last argument they made a big deal that it was during the initial part of the government's argument. But this was in the rebuttal.
In the rebuttal of the argument, and the request to enforce the law was actually the last thing that the jury heard. In its argument in closing, the prosecutor says, "You know, the defense here is that everybody's lying. They're all liars. Everybody is liars, liars, liars." And then he goes on to say that, talking about the agents, why would they lie? Risk their careers, commit perjury for what? A big bonus, a raise? No. They're just doing their job. They don't get anything out of it. What reward do they get for helping us out? They get to come here and be called liars. Isn't that great?
But there was no objection whatsoever.
There was no objection
to any of this.
It's absolutely frustrating. It absolutely, there should have been an objection.
Well, the government's not learning a lesson, and the defendants aren't either. Defense counsel aren't either, sounds like.
The defense counsel is sitting through it, and it is so frustrating. You are absolutely right. Since the 1970s, this court has been saying this is improper. And in this case, unfortunately, we are looking at it on plain error review. But this case is consistent with Gracia and with Garza, the case that goes back to 1979, and finding plain error review because it is a case where we are weighing the credibility of the witness's statements. Now, in cases where the court has not found plain error, there has been overwhelming evidence of guilt. Cases such as Gallardo, and I'm going to mispronounce the name and I apologize. Gallardo Trapero. In that case, the court did not find plain error. But in that case, the court, when reviewing the strengths and the weaknesses of the government's case, this court concluded that the improper remarks did not affect the defendant's substantial rights because of the numerous witnesses and pieces of evidence, it was a multi-count 10 co-conspirator case, drug distribution courier case. And they concluded that this improper remark did not substantially prejudice the defendant's rights. In a case such as Goff, again, the court declined to find plain error. And that there were five appellants charged on multiple counts related to several importations of cocaine and marijuana with substantial and overwhelming evidence of guilt.
Isn't this evidence pretty overwhelming, counsel? I mean, he's got all these aliens in his thing. He's got that seal up there. His story is so implausible. This is pretty strong. This is real strong. He transported those people. He had them. He actually had one of them testify about him. This seems like a pretty substantial case.
I disagree. I think that the jury did have two versions before it. They had the agent's story, which was that Mr. Pittman was approached in the parking lot at Academy and asked to transport aliens. And they also had Mr. Pittman's version of it. And that's what the jury had to weigh, were those two versions. With this improper...
And he, after these people did it, they somehow, the aliens got into his...
Well,
his
trailer.
His trailer, and they got the seal that he had, and they put...
No, he himself said that he put the seal on there. He said, in other words, these are explanations and versions that the jury would have to weigh.
Yeah, but there was testimony if the trailer was coming back empty that you wouldn't put a seal on.
Right. And that's
why did he put a seal on?
And that's exactly what the jury would have to weigh. His version...
There's not a whole lot of weighing there.
His version was that he put the seal on because this man wouldn't leave him alone. He kept approaching him and kept bothering. So he closed it and put the seal on it. When you have something like this, and on cross-examination, what the prosecutor is saying sets up this dichotomy. If you're going to believe Mr. Pittman, then you have to believe these officers are lying.
Why would I put a stamp on an envelope I'm never going to send? All of this stuff, it just seems to just ponderate so heavily. And you've got this fairly implausible story that someone approached him and without his knowledge put these aliens in his place, in his truck, whereupon he put the seal. Well, where was, if he didn't know about it, where were they going to deliver this truck? How were the bad guys ever going to recover the aliens? What, they were just shipping them for free? This is kind of an implausible defense.
The defense's argument was that it was unbeknownst to him. And we have seen cases on the border where it's unbeknownst to the person that they're driving drugs or that they're transporting aliens.
Well, this is not a drug case.
That's true. Or that they're transporting aliens. There was testimony from both the agent and Mr. Pittman that it was dark in there. You couldn't see the aliens until you put a flashlight on them. It's true. What the jury had to weigh were two variations on a story. But the prosecutor took that away from
him. How would the person that put the aliens in the truck know where the defendant was going? How would he recover the aliens? How would he tell the employers or the other people that are going to get the services of the aliens where to meet these people? How would that person know whether he's going to Victoria or Los Fresnos or Abilene?
Right, and that would be something for the jury to think about. Of course, there could be someone following the truck. This is a long drive from Edinburgh to Houston. He's going to make several stops. Again, what we're looking at
is... Why is he going to make several stops? I thought the truck was empty.
He's going to make stops. I don't think... Well, of course, I'm a woman. But it would be possible to drive from Edinburgh to Houston without making several stops. But, and you know...
And so the guy that he hasn't talked to about it is going to follow him and then, I guess, what, accost him or relieve him of the aliens?
Or say, you've got aliens, we need to get them out. I strongly believe that the jury would have to weigh two different versions and that was taken away from by the improper argument.
Yeah, but if there's a rock on one side and a feather on the other side, it seems like that's pretty overwhelming.
He had a lot of cash, too, didn't he?
And he had the cash.
He had
$4,100
in cash.
And there was testimony that they got so much, and that was corresponded to the amount of cash that the alien said that was being paid per person. That was just a coincidence that he had this cash?
Right. And there are strengths of the government's argument. There's also weaknesses with the government's arguments. There are real problems with the material witness's statements, with them saying that I didn't want to read this statement, I didn't understand it, I refused to sign it. With one of the witnesses adamantly saying, I never identified him, and the agent said that they had identified. There were things for this jury to consider, and it was taken away from them by this improper argument, by setting up this dichotomy. If you believe Mr. Pittman, you have to believe that the agents are lying. And then during closing argument, pounding on them that they wouldn't lie, they wouldn't risk their careers, they wouldn't commit perjury. It is an unfair trial. That's the result of that. It is still weighing the evidence.
Let's say you threw away all the officers' testimony in this case.
Yes.
Would you still have a real strong case? I mean, assuming there's no dispute that the aliens were in the truck and the circumstances under which they got his explanation of how they got in there, seems like you could throw away the supposed confession and you still have a pretty doggone strong case.
I think that he provided explanations that the jury would have to weigh for each thing, including the seal. I think that the one factor that he did not give an answer to, wasn't asked about, was that that it was closed. How were the aliens going to get out? And that is something that, to me, is not overwhelming evidence, not like the cases where this court has reversed in something like Goff, where there is a great deal of evidence presented. It's not just a credibility contest between the witnesses. And in this case, just like in Garza, the improper comments go directly to and intend to influence the jury's critical credibility choice. That's why it's improper.
Well, we know it's improper. They've conceded that it's improper.
Yes.
So we're beyond there.
I do think that the factors that we weigh on plain error, whether or not it affected his substantial rights, the magnitude of the statements, the jury instructions, and what you are focusing in on, the strengthened witnesses of the evidence. That's what we're looking at here. I think the magnitude is quite strong, and it is prejudicial, given that it starts not just at the closing argument, the rebuttal, the last thing the jury hears, but it starts during the cross-examination of Mr. Pittman. And I pointed to the case in United States versus Williams. Now, in Williams, although they pointed out that type of cross-examination was improper, they did not reverse on plain error and found that the evidence was not overwhelming. But the court did point to a Second Circuit case in Williams in which the panel, the Second Circuit, did reverse on plain error. And the reason why was because there was an additional error beyond the cross-examination. And Williams is pointing to United States v. Richter, and that is 826 F. 2nd 206. In that case, on cross-examination, the prosecutor asked several questions of the defendant, saying, so you're saying the FBI agent was mistaken or was lying? And then in closing argument, the prosecutor said, why would two agents of the FBI with some 30 to 40 years of experience between them come into this courtroom and commit perjury and risk their careers to get the defendant? The two combined, the court found, was reversible plain error. And I believe that that's what you have in this case. I don't think that the evidence is so overwhelming that the prosecutor should have taken that weighing from them by making these types of improper argument and this type of egregious cross-examination on the case. All right. If there are no further questions at this point, I'll reserve the rest of my argument for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel. I'm a lady. Did I pronounce that correct?
Yes, sir, you did. Yes, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Suzanne Elmalady, and I represent the United States government this morning. I'd like to start off by saying that Pittman failed to show reversible plain error regarding the prosecutor's cross-examination remarks and rebuttal closing arguments. The statements were minimal, and the evidence was overwhelming. When the issue is raised for the first time on appeal, this court, as just stated, reviews a claim of alleged improper remarks solely for plain error. I'd like to start off by discussing the closing arguments. In Pittman, the defense attorney stands up in his closing argument and starts making remarks such as, the statements were coerced, the agents were lying, they were mistaken, the witnesses were enticed, this is not how we do things. You can't rely on their reports. These comments were just so overwhelming in terms of alleging such misconduct on the agents and their testimony. In response to that, and as an advocate for the United States government, the prosecutor stands up and replies. And in his reply, he makes statements such as, why would the agents lie? They're just doing their job. Mr. Pittman is alleging that there's a conspiracy. These such remarks are not egregious and do not rise to the tenor of the reversible comments as found in Gracia. I'd like to distinguish our case from...
Okay, I thought you conceded that they were bad, improper remarks. Now you're telling us that they're minimal, it's not really a big deal. How do we know that you got the message that it is not minimal and it is a big deal, these remarks?
Your Honor, we are conceding that the cross-examination remarks were improper. We are not conceding that the rebuttal closing
arguments... The jury argument.
Yes, Your Honor.
You're saying that I was invited, or
Your Honor, yes.
That was reasonable reply to the assertions of the defense counsel that the agents were lying.
Yes, Your Honor. And as seen in the transcript, in the initial opening statement of the closing, the prosecutor says there's an overwhelming amount of guilt. Look at the facts. And the prosecutor goes over all the facts and all the testimony and all the tangible evidence in the trial. When the defense attorney gets up and starts attacking the credibility of the witnesses, that is then when the prosecutor stands up and defends the witnesses.
But didn't the defense counsel say Mr. Pittman does not want to call the agent liar?
Your Honor, there was an implicit indication, an implication that is all that the defense attorney was doing. He, as a matter of fact, in his closing argument, uses the word lying and liars at least two or three times. He stands out there and he basically says all of them are lying about that.
Well, what do you do when he does not want to call the agent liars? And the other times that he mentioned liars, he says that we're not lying. We're not saying that they're lying. Or are they similar to this, or did he actually say that the agents were lying?
Are you talking about the defense attorney, Your Honor?
And
yes, sir. He did actually stand up there and say all of them are lying about that. Now, the defense attorney in their brief, the defendants in their brief initially said that there was a mistake in the record and that it should be relying as opposed to lying. We are not conceding that there was a mistake in the transcript whatsoever, because there is evidence before and after that the defense attorney did actually use the word lying. And there was no reason for us to concede that in this only instant he didn't really mean to say the word lying. He meant to use the word relying. So with that, in that respect, Weatherly has held that it is reasonable for a prosecutor to respond to the defense's attack on the credibility of the government's agents. As an advocate of the court, if the prosecutor were to sit back and not respond, it would be as if he were conceding that these agents were not telling the truth. And I would also direct your attention to the difference in the actual Ingrassia, where the court found that it was improper and they did reverse and distinguish that from our case. Ingrassia, the prosecutor stands up and invocates his own personal beliefs to the jury and asks the jury to find the defendant guilty because he believes that they are, because he wouldn't put somebody on the stand that would commit perjury. He takes it to another level of egregiousness, and which I do agree that was improper. In our case, the prosecutor does no such thing. He simply replies very minimal statements regarding saying, why should you believe the officers are lying? He also further goes on to say, your verdict will say what you believe. You are the finders of fact. You judge the credibility of the witnesses, which goes along the lines with the jury instructions. That is very different from Gracia, where the prosecutor stood up there and invocated his own personal beliefs and over again asked the jury to find their agents to be credible because he said so. And also, Your Honors, in that case, the court looked at what the evidence was during the jury trial. In our case, we have an overwhelming evidence of guilt, as Judge Benavides just said. We have a feather and we have a rock. In our case, we have a solid rock. In the Gracia case, you were weighing two feathers. All you had in the Gracia case was the agent's testimony. That was the only link to the drugs in this hidden compartment that could link the defendant. Otherwise, it was just a mere presence case. The money was found on the co-defendant. The drugs were found in a hidden compartment that was not visible to just a person riding in the car. So the only way to find the defendant guilty in the Gracia case was to believe the agents. So when the prosecutor takes it to another level in Gracia and vouches for their credibility, that in itself is improper. In our case, we have an overwhelming amount of guilt, evidence to prove guilt. We have not only that the aliens were actually transported, they were put in a trailer with a seal on it, which the academy manager came in and said, the only way that a seal can be put on is by an academy employer. Well, Mr. Pittman was not an academy employer. He himself on the stand actually conceded to that. He also conceded that he did put the seal on there. We have the aliens' testimony. We have the actual $4,100 in cash found in his front pockets that was not in a wallet, it was in a wad of cash. We had the fact that he signed the statement where he was going to relieve them of the money that he was found in his possession. We also had his own statement that the only way the aliens could have exited that trailer is if somebody opened it from the outside. I think all this together shows, like Your Honors has suggested earlier, that even without the prosecutor's remarks, or even without the agent's testimony, there is an overwhelming amount of guilt to find the defendant guilty. And the courts have always looked, when weighing the improper remarks, if they were found to be improper, based on the weight of the evidence and to judge to see if not for the prosecutor's comments would the defendant have been found guilty. I submit to you absolutely in this case. And to disregard the jury's verdict in this case would be harmful to the integrity of the judicial proceedings.
So if you were advising these prosecutors in this case, you would say A-OK to page 27 of the transcript about what they said about they're just doing their jobs, they don't get anything out of it, what do they get for helping out? You would say that's all perfectly fine.
I would say, Your Honor, that being said, taken out of context and maybe in the initial part of closing would be incorrect, but because it was in direct response to the defense attorney flat out calling the agents liars.
Who said repeatedly, I am not calling the agents liars. I'm not. He's got a page right before the page that you claim they called them liars and they say that they didn't in the transcript area. He said, I am not calling them liars. I want to emphasize I'm not calling them liars.
Well, Your Honor, he goes further on to say that not just because an alien smuggler had fooled them, but because of the Border Patrol's actions. The defendant is upset. And then he further says, we do not entice people like that. This is not how we obtain evidence, even if they are not from this country. I mean, this also goes, and this is a direct...
That's not a liar.
Yes, Your Honor, I understand that. But that right after that, he goes off and he does call the agents liars. And we are not conceding by any means that he meant the word relying. We are suggesting that he did mean to use the word lying.
So if he uses the word lying one time, then you can give this response, is how you would counsel the U.S. Attorney's Office.
And, Your Honor, even
is
if...
Is that correct?
Your Honor, and I would... Even if the word relying is put in there as opposed to the lying, it would still be a proper response to what he was suggesting.
No, that's what I'm asking you. If he said lying,
yes,
would you counsel the U.S. Attorney's Office if this was correct?
I would not. I, Your Honor, I'm just focusing on this case. In terms of counseling the U.S. Attorney's Office with regards to that, I think it's a case-by-case basis.
Was this correct in this case if he said lying?
Yes, Your Honor.
How do you distinguish our Taylor case that says even where they indicate that the witness committed perjury, the government went beyond rebuttal, that going the next step is beyond appropriate rebuttal?
Your Honor, I would direct your attention to the U.S. versus Weatherly case or the U.S. versus Vaccaro case, where they actually said it is very reasonable for a prosecutor to respond to the attack on the credibility of the witnesses.
How do you distinguish the Taylor case, please? Are you familiar with that?
I'm not familiar.
What about Ramirez-Velasquez? Are you familiar with that case?
Your Honor,
it's okay if you're not.
I did not see that in the brief. I apologize for that. But I will direct...
Weatherly is not from our circuit, is it, counsel?
I believe it is, Your Honor.
U.S. v. Weatherly, isn't that a Third Circuit case? It's not even from our circuit. The cases I cited were from our circuit. Isn't that correct?
Yes, Your Honor, you are correct. I would direct your attention also to look at the... When making a decision to reverse a case based on a prosecutor's improper remarks, you've got to look at whether or not it affected the defendant's substantial rights. And in our case, the prosecutor's remark did not affect the defendant's substantial rights. And the determinative question is, did the prosecutor's remark cast serious doubt on the correctness of the verdict? And if your honors do believe that the remarks were improper, I will still submit to you that even if you do believe that they still do not cast a serious doubt on the correctness of the verdict. I would also like to direct your attention to the cross-examination. In our brief, we cited a case, Munoz-Hernandez. Now, although Munoz-Hernandez is not binding, it is very persuasive because this court has held in the past that in asking the defendant on cross-examination whether or not the agent was lying, that it was only verbalizing the fact that on direct examination he was implying such a thing. And Munoz-Hernandez is very factually similar to our case. And
does it even have any analysis?
I understand that, Your Honor, but it does talk specifically about the cross-examination. It does cite Williams.
How can it be persuasive authority if it's unpublished and doesn't contain any analysis?
Well, Your Honor, it does go further on to cite Williams, and it talks about how, because it was so factually similar, because this court has actually held that the questioning on cross-examination of asking whether or not the agents were liars or not does not substantially affect the defendant's rights in the overall grand scheme of things because the prosecutor's statements were minimal in light of the fact that the statements came after Munoz had already contradicted the officer's testimony. That is, Pittman.
What is the purpose of a prosecutor asking a defendant who takes the stand whether or not the government witnesses are lying? What does the prosecutor hope to establish by the answer from the defendant?
Your Honor, I concede that that's improper, and I he's asking him to comment on the veracity of the witness, and I do understand the circuit has held over and over again that that is improper, and we are not disagreeing with Your Honor.
And that's what happened in this case.
Yes, Your Honor. We are not disagreeing with Your Honor, but we are. But what I am saying is that even though this did occur, at the end of the day, in order to reverse a case such as Pittman, you would have to find that it affected the defendant's substantial rights. And that just did not happen in this case. The defendant had a very fair trial. He took the stand, and unlike Gracia, when the defendant did not take the stand. In our case, Pittman, the defendant took the stand. The jurors got to hear the defendant get up on the stand and give his version of the story, which was clearly unbelievable just by reading the transcript.
Got to hear the prosecutor hammering on him about whether or not the government witnesses were lying. Over and over and over again, he asked that question.
Your Honor, in the 26-page transcript of the cross-examination of the prosecutor did, there was only about 4 or 5 pages where he asked whether or not he thought that the agents were lying, and it happened towards the end of the cross-examination. The rest of the cross-examination done by the prosecutor was excellent in terms of getting out the contradictory story versus his version versus the agents. At the same time, if you look at the very last page of the transcript of the actual court's proceedings, Judge Head actually makes a comment when making a decision on whether or not to remand the defendant into custody, and he says it was one of the worst cases of perjury he's ever seen with regard to the defendant's testimony. I think this actually is huge because it shows what went on in that courtroom. It gives a dynamic and the feeling of how the defendant's testimony was taken in retrospect and compared to the rest of the evidence in the case.
Is it proper for us to consider that?
Your Honor, I think that it's part of the transcript, and I'm not asking you to consider.
That doesn't change your case law, counsel. Counsel, you have a wonderful argument about the strength of this evidence.
Yes, Your Honor.
And I'm a little confused because you admit that some of this stuff on cross-examination was error, and then you seek the defendant. And I don't know whether you're on first base, second, or third base, but I think you can come all the way home if you just argue about the strength of this evidence. Frankly, I think that we'd look kind of foolish saying that this evidence wasn't so overwhelming. And that's your case, but you don't have to.
Your Honor.
It seems to me you're cutting across your own your credibility in your brief when you admit that some of these things are wrong and get up here and try to defend these things which were wrong. And we said it the wrong and you said it the wrong, and now when I come up here, I'm wondering what your argument is.
Your Honor, I'm sorry if I misled you. I did concede that the cross-examination remarks were improper, but they do not affect the defendant's substantial rights. I believe I did say that. I'm sorry if I came out incorrectly.
Well, I think you hit all quit drilling. That's your argument.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, I'd like to further discuss that looking at all the case law and looking at this court's holdings in the past, that exactly what Your Honor has just said, because of the overwhelming evidence of guilt in this case, we respectfully request this court to affirm the conviction of the district court's proceedings. And if you have no further questions, I will take a seat.
All right. Another swat at it.
Quickly, just to clarify, and I know that the court will be focusing on the record in this case, during closing argument, defense counsel talks about the problems with the material witnesses' testimony that arose during that testimony, and does say that this is problematic. And says, Mr. Pittman does not want to call these agents liars. I do not want to call these agents liars, but there has been a problem here. This is a mistake. And the mistake he's referring to is that these agents telling these witnesses that they will be able to go home and they can contact their families if they'll just sign these documents. Both of these witnesses testified to that. He is referring to facts in evidence when he is making that closing argument. And as both of us have addressed in footnotes, the comment about lying, one of the points that was made quite clear during the testimony is that there was one report made, and that each of these officers, when they took the stand, admitted that they were relying on that report to refresh their memory and that they had reviewed it prior to testifying. And that's what the defense counsel is saying. We all have the agents here saying what happened. All of them were lying on that. In other words, we're relying on that report. I do think that that's a typo taking in context. One report. How are we supposed to rely on their testimony when we can't even rely on what was said in that statement? So that's this area that there. Those are the three lies that the government is saying that opened the door, and this was a fair response to that. And it is not. The argument was not a fair response. As this court said in Gallardo Trapero, while a prosecutor can argue that the fair inference from the facts presented is that a witness has no reason to lie, a prosecutor's closing argument cannot roam beyond the evidence presented during trial. And in that case, the government, the court found comments in a similar vein impermissible. I repeat, do you think that agents for the federal government and the prosecutor are going to risk their career and take the stand? That is not a fair response. This type of argument is not a fair response to Mr. Pittman putting on his defense. I would also like to say that from our perspective of looking at a number of cases, I do not think it would be embarrassing for this court to overrule on this case. This jury had to weigh two different versions of the fact, and then weighing the credibility of that was taken away from them by the prosecutor's improper remarks, and it was compounded by the improper closing argument. There is nothing in the remarks that I have pointed out that this court has said is a fair response. It is improper argument. And the jury instruction, in this case, the general instruction, did not cure the argument. I think that it went right to the credibility. The jury was taken out of their hands. Why should they find that the agents were lying? Why should they find that they would risk their career? It was simple for them. All they had to infer was that Mr. Pittman must have been lying. You take it based on what he set up during cross-examination, and you take that from the closing argument. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Kat.
All right, thank you.
I appreciate your zealous advocacy on both sides for your party.